Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
12 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame. You're listening to the Small Business Advocate Show, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Steve Wallace is here. Stephen Wallace is the founder and the president of the Omanheen, I think is the way you pronounce that, Cocoa Bean Company. He's the author of Obroni and the Chocolate Factory, which is an interesting book on his story and the relationship of his story with globalization and doing business in Africa. And he's our new friend, Steve Wallace. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. So you're trained, educated as an attorney. You worked in your own company. And then you got this wild, crazy idea to open up a chocolate factory in Ghana, Africa.
Right.
I know what you were feeling, but what were you thinking?
Well, I'm sure like many of your followers, you wake up one day and in one of the few moments of clarity I had at the age of 29, I knew I wanted to start this business mainly because I didn't want to be 80 years old and think, "What if?
What have I done to help people?"
Yeah. Well, what's it all about? And I had been working as a tax lawyer in Washington D.C. Had sort of, I suppose, the good fortune that the firm was going through some changes, transition from founding partner to the next generation, and. You know, the future there was uncertain in a mm-hmm. lot of respects. And so sometimes you get pushed into new opportunities, maybe unwittingly.
So a door, it looked like a door might be closing and you were looking for the window to open up.
That's exactly right. And I had the great good fortune to have been an exchange student when I was 16 years old and was sent to a little town called Sunyani, Ghana in West Africa. And
it was so you already had some experience with Ghana. You knew how to get there.
I at least knew where it was on a map.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like that wonderful book you go back and you reread every year or every second year. And that experience was so transformative for me, and I had such affection for this part of the world.
Right.
I wanted to go back.
Why were you drawn to Ghana?
Well, it was, I was placed in Ghana. I had wanted to, I grew up in Wisconsin, thought there was a bigger world out there. Was fascinated by all sorts of documentaries of other countries and other cultures. So these things interested me. In fact, I said that I was kind of comfortable being in an uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, being comfortable in an uncomfortable situation is absolutely fundamental.
If you can't be comfortable with being uncomfortable, you won't be a good entrepreneur.
Well, I think so. I agree. And so this. I lived with a very traditional family. My host father in Ghana had three wives. He had 21 children.
Wow.
I took my place as child of 22. And, I just saw, I was an unwitting witness to the emergence of modern Ghana. So at that time, it was run by military dictatorships.
Right.
It was part of what they called the lost decades, one
mm-hmm.
military dictator after the
Were
other.
You ever in danger, in jeopardy?
I never felt it, no. We
yeah.
had a coup that summer, but... I was surrounded, and this, to go back to your question, was, I think, the warmth of the people. That's what attracted me to Ghana. I mean,
mm-hmm.
this family just enveloped me in love and curiosity about where I came from.
Isn't it amazing how the concept of love is universal?
It really is.
And not just love, but agape love, loving people that you either don't know or you don't know well.
Well, and maybe that's the test of love, really. It's
I
easy
think it
if
is.
Everybody looks like you, talks like you,
yeah.
thinks like you, but sort of keeping that open mind and open eyes and open ears, I think, is absolutely the most compelling thing in the world and the most kind of transformative. So I always want to be open to those kinds of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. So you were over there as a kid. You came back. And you're got your career going, and now there was always an itch in the back of your in the back of your head, right? You need to scratch it a little bit again, right?
I did. I needed, I guess, an excuse to go back to that part of the world, and I saw this kind of legacy of a lot of.
What did you when you decided to go the first when you tried to go back? What were your obligations here?
Well, my obligations at this point.
Did you have a family?
I was married. I had a very young family. I had just had twins.
Wow.
They were when I first went back to Ghana on the first trip. They were barely toddlers. They must have been something like between 11 and 13 months.
Wow.
Like, they were about 1 year old.
Wow.
And you know, I thought about this, and I had saved up. I had an.
Did you have a plan? Did you have a plan? I mean, did you know what you were going to do when you went there? Or were you just going to go over and figure it out when you got there?
No, I you know, I had done a lot of preparatory work before the first trip back professionally. I had spoken with the U.S. Embassy in Ghana.
Right.
I had spoken with the Ghanaian embassies here in the U.S. We had done a lot of work setting up meetings and trying out the right people and had anyone.
And you knew you wanted to be, you wanted to start a chocolate company.
I did. Well, I looked around. I wanted to go back to Ghana and do something with purpose and substantial. And Ghana had really four raw materials. It used to be the Gold Coast when it was a colony, British colony. So it had gold, it had diamonds, it had bauxite, which is how you make aluminum. And it had cocoa. Now, gold and diamond were cartels, and I couldn't break in there.
Right.
Aluminum smelting is a $1 billion business. I had neither the money nor the technical
expertise. And today, aluminum is on its heels.
It's on its heels,
yeah.
Right. And it's a commodity, and I wasn't I was more interested in moving up value chain.
And plus, you can eat chocolate, right?
Plus, you can eat chocolate. You can eat your inventory if it's a bad day. But I grew up in a family of people who like to cook. So when I looked at the raw materials there, I saw cocoa, and I thought to myself, you know, if you ask, well, where does good chocolate come from? Your listeners might say, well, Switzerland or Belgium or France.
They don't grow chocolate beans, cocoa beans in Switzerland.
They don't. How many cocoa trees grow in
Europe? No, there are none.
None. And that stuck in my craw. That, to me, was the real motivator. Was why not? Why hadn't a country that grows, which reputed the finest cocoa beans in the world, they fetch a premium on the world commodity markets. How come they had, why are they selling beans at pennies a pound when if you assembled the right assets in the right place, you could be making chocolate that
restructure
sells for
and improve that economy. So folks, now you've got an idea about what was motivating him. It's a great story. We come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the business of being in the chocolate business in an African country. Quick break, right back with Steve Wallace. The book is called Obroni.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.